Hey there, y'all. It's Suka for Stripponomics. So, as I promised, I have a little something special for y'all. And it's myself and the Weekend Watcher doing a review on a documentary, actually called No-No Documentary, about a baseball player. So, I don't really think I need to intro it because you're going to hear everything you need to hear about it. So, hope y'all enjoy. Here you go.
All right. So, we're getting and sitting here with Suka from, well, you can introduce yourself.
I do a pod with a couple other girls, strippers with anxiety, and then I try to help people with finances on my own for kind of towards the adult entertainment industry with just my own pod called Suka, Stripponomics, that I got from you, actually. You helped me with that name.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things I love about podcasts is you can always strip it, like, just throw on a cute name. And by the way, like, not going to take full responsibility for Stripponomics, but it is a damn cute name. And I will tell you, like, it has so much applicability for people really outside of the adult entertainment world, for people in, like, the world.
Because lame terms, I think, right?
Yeah, for all of us civilians out here. So, it's brilliant, and Suka is actually one of the, like, I found you guys by accident, because you're prolific and whatnot. I found the first podcast, Strippers with Anxiety, like 4 months ago, something like that. It's been a fun roller coaster ride.
Yeah, it has. It's been pretty good, and we've listened to yours. I think my friend Summer, she listens to yours, as do I, so we're all fans of yours, too.
That's really sweet. So we're going to be running down. We are running down. I call it rundowns because, you know, this is fun to talk about. We're going to be talking about the documentary. It's on U.S. Netflix, and if you want to find it somewhere else, do you have another recommendation?
I found it online, streaming through, a documentary website.
Look it up, folks. It's currently on U.S. Netflix, or if, you know, you have any kind of other methods, use that, and it's called No-No, a Documentary.
So good.
All right. So, let me give some quick background on No-No, a Documentary. It's following up on a crazy, probably one of the craziest stories in all of baseball, a man who pitched a no-hitter, Doc Ellis. He pitched a no-hitter while he was lit up on LSD. What you get is a story, not just that story, but what is way, way more. You get something way bigger than just this one little story in his life. Do you think that's fair to say?
I think you get so much. There's way more than I ever anticipated out of a documentary about a baseball player, even though you know you're watching it about someone who pitched a no-no on LSD. But there's just so much to that documentary. It's unbelievable. So much.
Yeah, I joke about it with my friends because I watched it a long time ago, and then you're the one that reminded me of it. But I joke with my friends that it is just a roller coaster of emotion.
Very much so. It was way more emotional than probably any sports documentary I've ever watched in my life.
Yeah, I mean, they're just high highs where, you know, they're fun, cute stories of totally. You know, pitching a no-hitter on acid. There are heart-wrenching stories that involve, for example, Jackie Robinson. Oh, by the way, oh my God. Suka, I usually have a no spoilers rules on regular movies, but documentaries, you can look up online, you can just look at Wikipedia. So yes, we can spoil.
Yes. All right. I'm so down to spoil because there are so many funny things and yet cute things. And I found that the movie honestly, my favorite is that he wore curlers on the field. And everyone makes
oh my God.
A big deal out of it.
And this is one of the, like, honestly, this is one of the stories that starts off the doc.
Yeah.
So is this your hook? Is this the thing that hooked you in?
This made me go, oh my God, what is going on? I love this man. I just loved him.
The story is actually pretty straightforward and at the same time, hyper devious.
Yeah, totally.
So Doc Ellis, a pitcher by trade, played during a time where, you know, in major league sports, they were super into cheating. This is the deflate gate of his time, and how he would wear curlers on the field from time to time. and he would do that because he knew that, you know, the product he had in his hair plus sweat would make, you know, would allow him to cheat the foreign substance rule while he was pitching. Brilliant.
Too good.
Yeah, it's just too good. Like, and to see him, yeah, he looks ridiculous, of course, but at the same time, he made this an issue with his bosses. He made this an issue with the owners. He made this, but he was able to cheat the rules in the most creative, clever way I think I've ever heard.
Ever. Honestly, that story right there just something else. He was just, honestly, I feel like he was such a, I don't know, for his time, he was so, I don't know, more than what you could ever think of for, like, when he was there. Because this was in the 70s, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so he was just so much more than anything. He was kind of like, you know, that how recently people have been saying, like, shut up and dribble. Kind of thing. I kind of feel like that would have been said to him back then, you know, but he did the same thing. He was like, no, I'll just do me, you know, which is great.
Yeah, that was awesome. And that's brilliant. I mean, like, in all honesty, it's brilliant that you bring that up because honestly, with this movie, there's so much layered in there. There's 1960s and 1970s race politics. There are politics in baseball. I mean, because free agency wasn't a thing in baseball until the late 70s.
Yeah.
So, and like, just to give anybody that's like not a super big sports fan or just only, you know, a sports fan of the modern era where you have free agency, imagine like you have a job and Zuka can verify on this one too. Imagine you have a job where somebody, your bosses say, hey, if you don't do this job, you can't work anywhere, period.
Yeah. Like you're done. You're just done.
Yeah, you're done. Yeah, you can work for, I don't know, this bank. And if you don't, you know, if you don't work for this bank, you can't work for any bank anywhere ever.
Yeah.
And, so, like, free agency, that's the norm amongst anybody that works anywhere, and that wasn't the norm in sports until, you know, the 70s, 80s.
Yeah. Honestly, there's so many different things that were going on during that time. Like you said, there's the drugs, obviously, the racism. I found that the media aspect, you know, the media aspect, because it was so new, I think, media coverage wasn't really, really big until around when he was, you know, this whole thing was taking place. So I think him having the whole cultural, like the fashion and everything that he was trying to bring to the table reminded me of like AI, like Allen Iverson, sorry.
I think that's fair.
You know?
That's fair, and I think, like, honestly, this is a documentary I put up there on par with one of the ESPN 30 for 30s.
Absolutely.
It's brilliant. It encompasses so much. Like, if you want to talk race politics, you can talk race politics. If you want to talk baseball politics, you can talk that. If you want to talk about, for example, like domestic violence or something, yeah, it's all in there.
It's all of it. Everything. There's everything in this movie. It's unbelievable. Documentary, rather.
This movie is everything. And it's hard to bill it that way, but it's accurately everything.
It really is.
So, I only have really about 5 questions that go through on these, so for anybody that's uninitiated, I always start out with, you know, what is the hook? What got somebody hooked in? And like, Zuka took it over on that one. All right, so tell me, I love that you said that essentially what he did was he was a magician like socially a magician, and I would have to parallel this back to your show, the Strippernomics show, more so than the strippers with anxiety. And I'll do it this way, right? So sorry, this is going to be a really weird long road to a short destination. In my head, and I've said this for years, in my head, I look at, femininity as being essentially doing a magic trick. And by that, I mean this. I look at, I look at my mom, I look at people I grew up with, and it goes like this. With a magic trick, you're hiding a lot of, like, adept thought, some learning through experience. You're hiding, clever positioning and suggestion, all behind something that, the viewer thinks they can understand in a second.
Oh.
And that's what makes a magic trick work. That you're hiding all of this thought into something that somebody thinks they understand in a second, and how they react is the same way with femininity is, with a magic trick. Some people get mad. They'll be like, you didn't saw that lady in half. That's not real.
They feel.
And yeah, exactly. And really, for me, that's how Strippernomics works. That's how your podcast works, is that you start to, like, if you're a kind of person that can appreciate a magic trick more when it starts to unfold itself, then this really is the podcast for you.
Oh, thank you.
So, yeah, this is long road, short destination, In that sense, that's why I was saying, in that sense, we can all stand to be a bit more feminine, right? Because for me, that's really kind of the opposite of how I live life. I'm very much on the surface.
Yeah. That's a good thing, though, right?
Yeah, no, it's a fair balance.
Totally.
Yeah, it's a wonderful balance, but, as I said, if somebody were to say, hey, I can understand this woman really quickly because I know that she dances for a living, or she takes off her clothes, or she does this or that. Oh, she does pole and aerials. Yeah, no, there's a lot more there.
Yeah, fair enough. I like that. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So, and how I always parallel this back to the movie is, same with Doc Ellis. You look at him, you're like, oh, yeah, he's, black guy from L.A., also a pitcher. Major league pitcher, so you could say dumb jock, you could say a lot of things. You could paint it however you want, but however you're going to do it, you're probably wrong.
Totally. Yeah. Especially, I think my idea going into watching this documentary was, because the premise of it going into it, that he pitched a no-no on LSD. So you kind of have this one side view of him, like, oh, it's just high, mm-hmm. What's it going to be? But then you realize all the adversity he had to go through and everything, just the difference of culture back then versus now. And you're just, he's kind of inspiring, He is inspiring.
Oh, my God. You're a seasoned pro at this, by the way. This pulled me like monkey bars into the next topic. Tell me one of the most memorable moments for you. Not like your hook, but the thing you're just like, oh, man, this is a story I can repeat to somebody. This is cocktail stuff.
I honestly think a lot of the, oh, my gosh, what I really liked, too, was the thing when he kind of got brought back down to life by Ellie, the boxer. So there's because this is such a well-rounded, documentary, and, obviously he's really good at his job. He's an amazing mm-hmm. pitcher. But everybody kind of has to be brought back down sometimes, and I feel like his interaction with Ali was just, it was that moment, Which was kind of, it was humbling, and yet it was entertaining as F. So,
oh, my God.
I like that.
No, perfectly, highly entertaining. So she's referring to a point in the show where, he caught it. Doc Ellis was showing off his quick hands of Muhammad Ali and then doing some some shadow boxing, and then he caught a quick punch. and it is what happened. You know what's also really amusing to me is, Muhammad Ali at that time, As a heavyweight, I think he was maybe only 210 pounds or so.
Oh my gosh.
Not a big guy, especially by contrast to what we see today.
Yeah.
And I always contrast everything to myself because I'm a horrible person. but I contrast this with myself is like I walk around at 216, and I'm 6'2", so I'm maybe an inch and a half taller than Muhammad Ali and walk around 10 pounds heavier, and I can do backflips. And he never did backflips. So for me, this is a straight-out comparison, but he would murder me.
Yeah, I mean, he was pretty good.
Exactly. So, no, yeah, I thought that was a great memorable moment. I would have to say, for mine, I'll pair it off this way. There's a point where he was reading a personal handwritten letter that was given to him from Jackie Robinson.
Yeah.
And, like, I had to catch my breath at one point during that, like, because it wasn't just that he got a letter from Jackie Robinson. It was a letter from Jackie Robinson thanking him for what he was trying to do to, you know, illuminate what's happening with black players. For example, you get screamed at on the field and many of the minor leagues, and how hard it is to just take it. And Jackie Robinson had to take it for a career.
Yeah.
And then in this like very heart-wrenching moment, where he breaks up, he's having a hard time. All of a sudden you hear Doc just go, and it broke the mood for me. It was so good.
Oh God.
It was that's sort of the movie in a nutshell, where it has a man that is entertaining and interesting and emotional, and then he's able to kind of snap you back to like having some fun.
Yeah, that's because I feel like that was kind of his MO. He just wanted to have fun, you know. His life mission was just to have fun and enjoy his gift, really, you know, which was pitching his arm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, you play a game for a living, you have to make sure you have at least a little fun.
Right?
Well, I mean, that is really a lot of this movie. Let's talk Suka. So, a little bit more about yourself. Let's hear a little bit about yourself, and then I have a couple of small questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
So you do Strippernomics. You started with Strippers and Anxiety as far as the podcasting world. You've been a dancer in BC. Honestly, I'll tell you this. When you guys announce that you're in BC, for me, Canada kind of goes as far west as Windsor. And then after anything west of that, you might as well just say you're in Narnia, because I won't know the difference. It's all theoretical to me. It's like, there are parts of the U.S. That are just theoretical to me. Like New Hampshire is just theoretical. That doesn't exist. It's not a real place. Like New Hampshire that's like saying you live in Wakanda. That just doesn't make sense to me.
Wakanda. Well, that's a little further.
it's just as real in my world. But so how long have you been out in D.C.?
I have been in D.C. for about 4 years. I've been in Vancouver for 2, and I was in a smaller city called Kelowna for 2 before here. So, yeah, it's interesting.
All right, so explain the interest. Has it always been there with, like, financial instruments and, like, the workings?
For me, this whole financial thing is steady something that I've seen. I've danced since I was really young. I was underage when I started, and I started on the East Coast, actually, in Canada, and kind of worked everywhere and decided that I wanted to be in BC at one point, obviously. But through my travels and through watching everything that happened, because I was ridiculously young and it scared me what I seen, so I never drank, I never did drugs, and it was just about money for me. I obviously had a strange circumstance that started it for me. It wasn't maybe a normal one, so that's why I was so young. But being young really helped me realize that I needed to do this and save the money, because I watched so many girls spend money on bad things, you know? So I always wanted to try and help girls, and because I was so young, nobody really listened to me. But then, you know, I'd see girls go into quote-unquote retirement from the industry, and they'd have nothing. And it made me so sad, because I knew if they just took a tiny bit of their money and put it away, that they could have so much when they quit, you know? Because the lifespan of a dancer usually is about 5 to 10 years at least, right? Kind of the same as pro athletes. So, you know, you can get quite a bit out of it, not pro athlete money, but you can make good money, you know? So I just wanted to help people. So I thought maybe a podcast would reach somebody that wanted to know, or somebody that needed help. And then also, like you were saying, it's very layman's terms, because, you know, you got to be able to have people understand what you're saying if they want to be interested in actually saving money.
No, that's brilliant. And, like, honestly, I'd have to say it this way, is that I come from an economics background. For anybody that doesn't know, I come from an economics background. I do people's math for a living. And by people, I mean I do large businesses' math for a living. But I'm not an accountant, because I don't have very much respect for accountants. Sorry, accountants, unless you're an actuary. Actuaries are cool. No, actuaries are cool. Every single one I've worked with has been great. In my tradition, the studied under, like, in economics, there are people like me that say, like, we have a little bit more trust for people that have skin in the game, for people that do the thing, right? Who do you want to take more advice from when it comes to, you know, pitching? Somebody that pitches, or somebody that says they watch pitching on the TV for 30 years?
Okay, fair enough. Well said.
So, for me, I love the topics that you pick, because they're very much topics that you have an authority over, because you're living them right there. And that's brilliant.
It's all trial and error, definitely. Trial and error.
So. Exactly. And it teaches you to manage risk. And you brought this up in one of your early episodes. By the way, guys, if you're ever recording with me, it's because I'm a fan. But in one of your early episodes, you said early on that, like, you got to be careful that lifestyle doesn't catch you. And that is not that is not something that's restricted to stripping. That's something that is, that's life.
Yeah, that's true, actually. That is very true. I think a lot of people, they take things for granted while they have them. And they could go with any aspect of your life, whether it's financial, whatever. But I think people just take them for granted while they have them. And then when things are gone, you lose your job, you lose whatever it is. Then all of a sudden they're sitting there going, oh my God. Well, you have to prepare for those moments. So.
Well, and you made a really good point that, stripper retirement is, 5 to 10 years. But at the same time, no matter where you work, your job is going to go away at one point. You're going to walk away, or it's going to walk away from you.
Totally.
So, being caught unaware becomes less of an option. You know that you're going to leave your workplace, and it's going to change at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
For you, it's a little bit more on the surface, I'm guessing, because you've probably seen people get, put out the pasture.
Booted. Bye.
Right? Yeah, I've worked for like internet companies in the past. Like, the internet startup world is crazy, and I've seen people get called into work and then get dropped at 8 o'clock on a Monday on a Tuesday morning.
Gosh. Oh my gosh! Yeah, and that's not really crazy. Yeah, that's just too, like, that's such a high-paced industry. I could only imagine how that would go.
Yeah, you hope that you negotiate a fair enough wage, or a high enough wage, that if you get dropped on Tuesday morning, you'll be fine for, next month or the month after that. But that was why I liked one of your early episodes, is like, if lifestyle doesn't catch up with you, you will be fine.
Yeah, Yeah. I think that's kind of something that, you know, we can all only do so much to ensure we have a stable job, right? No matter what it is. So it's definitely, stripping is, you know, you really have to take care of yourself if you want it to last a long time. You can't be eating bonbons all day. you have to prove that you have some value. And a lot of times youth is value in that industry. So you can't be doing it forever.
No, and myself, like, for anybody that doesn't, I played rugby in college, and I also, like, I compete in, professional, not really professional, grappling, submission wrestling tournaments. And yeah, I mean, it's you can only do that for so many years. I mean, you can technically do it, like, well in your 50s, but at the same time, it's like, you can only toss around 20-year-olds for so long.
Well, I could only imagine, like, rugby, we actually, in Vancouver, we just had, I think it's called the Six or something tournament. They do it every year.
Oh, Sevens.
4 years? The Sevens, yeah. So they do it for 4 years in the same place, and I believe that this was the last year for Vancouver. So I see rugby players, and they're big boys, and they scare me because they're large, and I'm not large. But they, honestly, I've watched rugby, and it's actually... physically, I cannot watch it. It hurts me because they put themselves through so much. It's insane. So their bodies take a beating. But that's with anything, like, especially if you have something physical, like you're saying, rugby or tossing around 20-year-olds, your body's going to give out on you eventually. So
yeah, after a while. I mean, I stepped away from rugby. I lived out of the country for a while. I lived in Europe for a while. Then I came back. When I came back to the States, I didn't have, like, I had some money, but I didn't have health insurance. So, like, I was going to start playing with another league, and then I stopped and saw it, and I was like, wait a second. Oh, God, if I break a collarbone or, need another surgery or something like that, that's going to be tough news. So I got to, like, I got to shut that mess down.
I could only imagine.
Yeah, there's not very much money in it. I've had friends that played for, like, USA. I think I had one friend that played for USA Sevens. Sevens is a high-paced game, probably one of the most high-paced versions of rugby ever. But, yeah, not much money in it.
No, see, that's the thing, too. I think that people, you really got to love the sport, I think, that people don't realize that certain sports, you got to love them. Like, lacrosse, I don't even know if you get paid. Not much.
I mean, I had a neighbor who was in the 2000 Olympics.
Oh, wow.
And she, oh my God, she's wonderful, and she is as feminine as it gets, meaning, like, it's all a magic trick. She's also a genetic biologist.
Oh, wow.
So definitely just an overachiever in virtually everything.
No kidding.
But yeah, it's as I said, like, part of what makes No a documentary work, and what makes Suka's podcast work, and also made my neighbor's, like, life work, is that there's just a lot more than you can understand in a second. And when you learn that there's a lot more, how do you choose to react? For me, sit and listen is probably the best one.
Yeah, that documentary is amazing. Amazing. So I have one question for you. Completely on podcast related.
Okay, let's see about this.
Right? You excited? Get fired up.
Wait, what was that?
Get fired up.
Oh, I'm there.
So my question is, you had mentioned before that you used to do busker work. So you were a busker. And
I was a busker.
What it was that you did as a busker?
So I, I played music in downtown street corners and on my off days and on the weekends in Germany.
Oh, wow.
So I usually played music about twice, three times a week, and on the off days I would, like, a Saturday, Sunday, or a holiday, or whatever, I would choose a street corner and try to get high traffic and, play some music, sing, go crazy. crazy. But like, and I'll tell you, like, the return on being a decent busker on a good day was about, let's see, it was about 28 euros an hour was about as good as I got. And at that time, that was about 56 bucks an hour.
Not bad.
It's not bad for, you know, I was going to be playing music anyway.
Yeah, so you might as well do it and prosper at the same time in some way, right?
Yeah, the only thing you learn is that you bore yourself really quickly with your own set list.
I feel that.
So yeah, I play about eight instruments, well enough to play out and record and whatever.
Oh my god.
And there, yeah, my mom made me play music since I was a little boy. And, it stuck. So I played guitar and I played mandolin.
That's awesome.
Yep, keeps me busy. And that's part, you know, actually this leads me into, I have a closing game I want to be able to play. And so for anybody that's new, that like, this is a new thing that I'm doing. I lead a weird life. I do weird stuff. So we're going to play a version of Two Truths and a Lie, where I'll tell, you know, two truths and a lie, and Suka will try to figure out, you know, which one's the lie, and then she'll do the same, she'll do the same with me. So who do you want to go first?
You. You go first.
Okay, brilliant. Let's think about this. All right. So, I was in a commercial for Catholicism. One. Let's think. Oh my god, this is a hard one. Two truths and a lie.
Right?
So, I was in a commercial for Catholicism. I can sing in Portuguese. And, let's think. I once worked on a farm.
Okay. I actually feel like you're very well rounded, and I feel like a truth. I'm gonna go backwards. I'm gonna work backwards. So the farm.
Ooh.
I feel like is a truth. I just feel like very well rounded, so I feel like it has to be true. Portuguese. That is a hard language. Well, I don't want to say no though, because I feel like there's just so much you know, and you've been to Europe, which, I mean, Portugal is pretty south.
It's part of there. It's there.
But I'm like geographically figuring it out.
Yeah.
I'm going to say the Portuguese is the lie.
Okay, so let's take this in order. I was in a commercial for Catholicism. That is absolutely true. I can sing in Portuguese. I can do that right now. I never worked on a farm, but I did work at a farmer's market for a summer.
Trick question.
Gotta be tricky.
That's true. Fair enough. That's very true. Okay.
So the singing in Portuguese kind of part came as a surprise?
Yeah, because I have a friend that's Brazilian and he speaks Portuguese, and obviously I don't know if people know that, but Brazilian people speak Portuguese.
That's always helpful.
It is a little helpful to know that, right? But yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's a really, really tough language. When I hear it, I'm like, wait, what? Hold on, back up. Hold on. Wait, huh? I just get very confused with that language.
It gets a little confusing, but at the same time, it's already built like a song.
Aw, that's a good way of looking at a language. That makes it sound really beautiful.
No, it's a very beautiful language. I sing in Portuguese. It's like a thing that I do every now and again. Especially like if I'm doing like a samba song or like Bossa Nova or something like that.
That's awesome. awesome. Look at you.
All right, your turn. Your turn.
All right, so me, I'm going to say, let's see what I can say. Okay, I'll trick you. Ooh, ha, ha, ha. So, I'm a huge sports fan, right? Let's pretend. Just kidding. So, am I a huge sports fan? I don't know. Okay, so I've been in music videos. Let's go with that as a one. Two, I've been to numerous stadiums, almost all stadiums for every sport. And number three, my degree is in finance. Okay, huh. There you go. Which one's a lie?
Okay, so you were in a music video. You have been to virtually, I just think, I swear to God, if there is, like, if you're just hanging out in a Drake video somewhere, I'm going to smash my brain on a wall. But that is going to be the lie.
That's not the lie. That's not the lie.
Ah, God.
I've actually been in a lot of music videos. I actually am shooting another one in about a week.
Jesus.
So, yeah. Kind of this weird thing that I seem to be like, this sounds so bad, and I don't mean any disrespect to anybody who does it, but I randomly end up as a video hoe quite a lot. So.
No, there's a talent there. For anybody that thinks like being anybody, like I said, I've been in a couple commercials at this point, and it's boring, and
yeah.
And like you have to like listen, you have to like engage. Imagine you're in the most boring meeting of your entire life and somebody can like smash together to look interesting for the course of 2 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're there for 4 hours.
Yep. I did a lot of acting for a little while, like background and stuff, and just a ton of different things. And videos, music videos ended up being just a niche, I guess. I ended up fitting in very well. So that's why I've done so many. But being on set is something that is more boring than anything. I kind of relate it to sitting in cafeteria when you're in school.
Yeah,
and there's like cool kids, there's not cool kids. And you're just like waiting your turn for your presentation. And all of a sudden it's like, go. Presentation.
Oh,
back.
No.
You know?
And the worst part of it all is like, like, the reason why you get asked back, and this is without me knowing you, like, hyper-personally, but the reason why you get asked back, at least from my, like, I have a couple friends that, you know, film stuff, is because, A, you don't whine or complain.
Never.
B, you're not a jerk, and then C, you're not staring into the camera's lens the entire time. That's how you get invited back.
It's the truth. It's so true. Those are the exact qualifications you need.
Yeah.
That's exactly like, it.
In a commercial that I was in, I was supposed to be at a restaurant. We were in a restaurant. So we were in a restaurant for like 3 hours. And I had to be there at, I think we were there at, oh God, like 6 o'clock in the morning or whenever sunlight hit until lunch.
Sounds
and
good.
I'm supposed to be on a date, right? And the deal with the date is that you're talking with your date, and they are not staring off at this random point in space. Oh, God. Like, it's not hard to get asked back, ladies and gentlemen.
No,
all you have to do is pretend to do what you're supposed to be doing.
Exactly. Mouthing words, not actually talking if you're in the background. Just not a lot.
Oh my God. Yeah, she was the worst. She was the worst because she just kept on every like 15 seconds staring into the camera, and I'm like, "Hey, I'm over here on your pretend date."
Oh my God, pretend date. I'm over there. That's amazing.
Oh my God. Yeah, that is pretty much how it works. The good thing is I didn't have to be eating. I never wanted to eat on camera because I hear a friend of mine told me that you got to do it over and over again, and I can't be doing that.
That just does not sound fun. It's painful. Right?
Like eating like cold, congealed, uncomfortable food over and over again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not a thing.
No. Not something I want on my to-do list in life. For sure.
But that is, yeah, that's two truths and a lie. I like this. This actually made the, this made me smile.
Yeah, it's fun. I like that.
All right, well, that pretty much wraps up the podcast. Suka, I want you to hold on for a second. If anybody wants to find her, if you're listening on Anchor, or Anchor FM, depending on how you look at the app, I'm going to be posting something from her around this time, and you can hit the gold star. In fact, I recommend hit the gold star. Suka, it's up to you. You can say do the thing.
Do the thing.
So that was it, guys. I hope you enjoyed our review. And the Weekend Watcher, you got to check him out. He's honestly amazing. If you like watching, who doesn't like watching anything on any platform, whether it's Hulu, Netflix, he literally goes through all of it. So check him out, The Weekend Watcher. I posted his link in my last little one, and I will post the link in this one for y'all to listen to him too. He literally just, honestly, the best. He's hilarious. He is accurate. I want to call it readings, but you know what I mean. You know what I mean, y'all. So thank you so much, Weekend Watcher, Reggie. Love and appreciate you. And I hope y'all loved and appreciated that pod that we did together, our little team up. So thank you. And also, on a secondary note, just so you know, I am hoping to have him on this pod talking about some financial stuff in the near future. So enjoy baseball season, y'all. Bye.